Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Thank you, Pete. Welcome back, Grant and Danny, on 106.7 The Fan. Second half of the show, back nine beginning. A lot still to get into on the program. We can get back into Ryan Zimmerman not playing with the Nationals and whether or not we've seen his final game with the team. What Adam Silver said about the NBA, still confident that they're going to be able to pull off their season, but he did leave open publicly for the first time the possibility that they may have to halt their progress. And one thing I really want to cover with you, Danny, is the fact that movies, as of right now, still are not coming back. This is normally the biggest month of the year for summer blockbusters, and that will not be the case. So we can look at some of the planned films and some of the things that are going on in that industry around the country. But right now, let's get to our Beltway Blitz. A couple teams to cover today, including the Redskins, and we'll start it right now. Chris Russell, you have heard his work for years right here on the fandc.com. You can check him out on SI's Maven site. Chris, I want to start with the Dwayne Haskins offseason. Where do you find yourself right now compared to the first day of the offseason in terms of how confident you are in Haskins as a sophomore?
Well, much more optimistic. There's no doubt about that. Love how hard he's been working. I don't love the personal photographer and videographer, but I guess that's just kids these days. I'm old as you know what, so I'm never going to love that. But it gives us an opportunity to see what he's doing in an offseason where we can't see what anybody's doing, right? So I guess, you know, you deal with that and you just accept it and it is what it is. I love how hard he seems to be working. I don't know where he's at mentally in terms of grasping the system. The last time we heard from Ron Rivera and Scott Turner, they said they were pop quizzing them at the beginning of meetings. I assume that's all going well. I've been told this is an easier system to learn than certainly Jay Gruden's was, which was very complex. So I think he'll be okay. But ultimately, as I said to J.P. Finley the other day on Twitter, I said, you know, we just won't know until he actually gets in the building with Ron Rivera and Scott Turner and where they can actually meet with him every day. And we're sure that he is putting in the same amount of work that he has put in seemingly this offseason on video into the Redskins and into that position. It's something that young quarterbacks in the past, Robert Griffin, have struggled with. So hopefully that is the case.
There were around 330 non-quarterback, so basically running back, the occasional jet sweep or gimmick play, whatever, carries, rush attempts by the Redskins last year. The biggest reason that's a low number, by the way, is because their offense stunk and you can't get more rushing attempts without converting some first downs. We can get into that. But if, let's say for the sake of argument, there's about 350 rush attempts this year. What's the breakdown? How does that get broken up on this roster?
In terms of who gets those carries?
Who gets those carries?
Oh, gosh. The X factor is, of course, Darius Geis, right? If he's healthy for 12 games out of 16, instead of whatever he's been doing over the last 2 years, which is, what, five games last year, parts of five games, and then nothing his rookie year. Let's just say he's healthy for 12 games. I'll give him, out of 350, I'll give him 200 carries. Adrian Peterson, I'll give, let's call it, 100. And then I think, you know, your J.D. McKissick's, your Antonio Gibson's kind of split up the rest of that pie and take a little nibble out of that remaining, what, 50. I'll go with that. I mean, I have no idea, just simply because I have literally no idea if Darius Geis is ever going to be able to stay on the field, as we've all chronicled. If he can, clearly he should be the bell cow, and he's the most explosive and dominant back that they have.
You know what nobody really talks about, Chris? The Redskins' offensive line. is not necessarily in banner shape right now. How do you feel about that group?
Yeah, no, it's what I would call it's average at probably best, and that might be kind. I think what Kyle and Ron have tried to do is bring in a lot of depth and a lot of bodies for competition, guys that nobody is even thinking about, like that Vujinovic guy and, you know, of course, Cornelius Lucas and all of that, which may push Jaron Christian off on the bubble. You know, again, I think maybe slightly above average would be generous. I think average is probably optimistic. Maybe below average is fair. I worry, you know, nobody worries about Brandon Scherr. I worry about, can he stay on the field? Can his body hold up? And that's why I wouldn't do the long-term deal with him unless it was a very favorable structure. So if that's your best guy and he's missed, or he's only played, I think, 19 of 32 games over the last 2 years, that's my biggest fear, more than the talent or lack thereof.
Russell, Chase Young is here, so that means, of course, he'll play linebacker and he'll play cornerback in the slot corner and members of the secondary. He's that great that you don't even need other guys out on the field. I'm, of course, being sarcastic. I'm concerned about the secondary big time, like really, 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 really concerned about it, especially in this division with what Dallas has done, the Giants' cadre of young receivers and weapons that they've got as well. I'm concerned. Where's their biggest weakness? And just kind of give me your concern level about that secondary.
No, I think you absolutely should be, because they're thin at corner. I mean, especially if something happens with Darby, which it happened routinely in Philadelphia over the last 2 years. And we still have so many questions about guys like Moreau and Moreland and what exactly their fit and growth curve is. I feel better at free safety with Sean Davis, again, if he's healthy, certainly than you ever would have with Monte Nicholson, who just drove me absolutely insane. And, of course, you know, Landon Collins figures to be a stalwart back there, but even he needs to make more impact, game-changing type plays. Maybe that's unfair, but that's what they need from him. But overall, there's no doubt that's a concern, a question. But the one way I know that you can help mitigate some of those questions and concerns, and I use this example all the time, is back when the Giants won their last Super Bowl. They didn't have a good secondary. They didn't have good corners. They had a terrific pass rush. They had a deep pass rush. And they rotated guys in that what they called that NASCAR package. And it helped cover up a lot of those problems on the back end. Now, can you do that all the time? No, of course not. Can you count on it? Probably not. But with Chase Young and Kerrigan and Ioannidis and Allen and Payne and just everyone, Montez Sweat, if they all stay part of this mix, I think the Redskins are going to be able to get by with a mediocre secondary, and mediocre might be kind.
Chris Russell with us on the Beltway Blitz. Thank you, buddy. Let's talk some puck.
Thank you, guys.
Steve Wino of the Associated Press. Swino, for people who haven't been tracking it closely, the Caps have been back at the facility a couple at a time over the last few weeks. What phase are we in? What are the Capitals actually doing? And give us the latest on the return.
Well, we're in the phase two, technically, still in the NHL, voluntary small group workouts. You can have up to 12 players on the ice at a given time. The plan right now is that's mostly going to be mostly conditioning. Guys really can't do a whole lot. You can have one or two coaches on the ice at a time. But the plan would be for training camps and two coaches being on the ice starting July 10th or soon after that.
Every time a group of people get together to try to bring a sport back, there's a setback and everybody's got to go home, etc. That's just kind of what's happened. You look at the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Texas Rangers, you know, everybody in between, right? What's acceptable for the NHL? It just in terms of, because guys are going to test positive, and if this, you know, machine keeps rolling, that's going to happen at some point. I guess what's the level of acceptability here, Swano?
I think the big question is, how much can you count on players and their families to quarantine during training camp? And that's what essentially the league is asking them to do, is not. Since players don't want to spend an extra 2 weeks away from their families, how do you get them and their mothers, their children, to not be out in the outside world as much as physically possible? And that's going to be the question. You're going to have positive tests as guys come back. You're going to have positive tests as they and their families are kind of out in the world. I think once you get into a bubble circumstance, an outbreak is what would stop this entirely. But I think there's an acceptable level of, if you don't have an outbreak, you're inevitably going to have positive tests, just like the NBA and golf and other sports have.
Steve, do we know for sure Edmonton and Toronto are the two cities that are going to be the hubs? Did that come down officially today, or is that still speculative?
I would say that's about 99% certain, but Vegas and Vancouver were 99% certain last week, and then it's going to be Toronto and Vegas. So this has changed so much, but it would take something crazy at this point to happen for it not to be Toronto and Edmonton. We think this person is the most likely team in Toronto, and the Western teams in Edmonton just for TV reasons.
So these two, and I think what I like about that is it's, you know, you don't have the same outbreak numbers that are crazy in that are taking place in Florida, and it's like the NBA is sort of locked into that. So you touched on this, Swano, but I want you to elaborate. How locked in is the NHL to these cities?
Fairly locked in at this point, and it's because of those reasons. It's because of the virus numbers are low, and also the Canadian dollar is tight. It's now 65 cents to the U.S. dollar, so the NHL can do all this cheaper. Now, we could see everything go up in flames if the players do not vote to return, do not vote on a new CBA extension. They're expected to be given kind of the layout of the return to play protocols and that by the end of this week. But at this point, if they're playing, it's most likely going to be in Toronto and Edmonton.
Thank you, Swino. We appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
At Swino on Twitter for more on the Caps and the NHL. Let's talk some ball. Today's the day. The Nats are reporting the Nationals Park. Byron Curve, Mass and Sports. You hear him here on 106.7 The Fan as well. BK, I wasn't sure we'd see this day, but it is here. I guess a celebratory one around baseball, right?
I would assume so, Grant, but, you know, a lot of collective holding of breath, right, when they're going to go and take all the health tests and make sure that they do not have any symptoms of COVID-19. So, yeah, you hope that every player that comes into Nats Park today and tomorrow is healthy and safe, obviously, and ready to go. It's been a long 3.5 months, so from the positive, optimistic out view of this, yes, absolutely, back to baseball. But I'm kind of holding my breath today, hoping that everybody's okay when they arrive.
BK, yeah, same here, obviously. BK, were you as surprised as Grant and I were about Joe Ross's decision?
Because I don't know any details of what's going on with Joe and how he feels personally, and as, you know, a lot of us said, it's none of our business, it's his decision. But, we saw Ryan Zimmerman coming from a mile away because he had talked about the concerns, and because of the history we know about his mother with multiple sclerosis and the new baby, newborn that he just had, and he has three kids, obviously. So a lot of concerns for him and Heather as a family. You respect Joe's decision on this, and I don't think it's going to be the last. I think we'll see some more guys, even before first pitch on July 23rd, come up and say, you know, I can't do this, you know, like we saw with Ian Desmond. So kind of surprised because, we hadn't heard anything more from Joe Ross before, and it could be a big 60 days for him. He would ultimately get like 8 starts if they plan it out correctly. And it seemed like he'd really turned a corner at the end of last season and be a valuable part of the Nationals. And in a short season where you're kind of running towards a pennant, you know, he could have been very valuable to the Nats.
Byron, thank you so much, and enjoy ball now that it is officially back. We appreciate it.
Same to you guys, too. I hope to see you guys at the socially distanced Nats press ballpark area.
Yeah.
Take care, guys.
Exactly. Thank you, buddy. We'll be on Zoom with you, I guess. Movie Club this hour at 12:45. Last night we watched Solo. I've got the pick of the movie we will watch tonight, and then Danny will round out the week tomorrow. We'll be off for a 3-day weekend come Friday. This hour, have we seen the final days of Ryan Zimmerman as a Washington National? Next hour, Albert Breer on the NFL at 1, Sean Kelly on baseball clubhouses as players make varying decisions on whether or not to give it a go this year. You're listening to The Fan. I'm Grant, he's Danny. You're listening to 106.7 The Fan. In just a bit, we'll get into Ryan Zimmerman and whether or not we've seen his final game with the Nationals. Saw this, though, in my Axios little daily newsletter that I get talking about movies versus sports in July and how normally, Danny, this is such a dead period for sports. Like right now, July 1st, you and I are normally going, okay, when are we going to take our one-week vacations? What are we going to be talking about? Did you see a movie this week that we can break down? There's nothing going on. But because of the pandemic, where everything got shut down and is now rebooting. You've got the MLS a week from today, MLB July 23rd, WNBA July 24th, professional lacrosse July 25th, the NBA coming back July 30th, and the NHL the same day in probably Edmonton and Toronto, as Steve Wino of the Associated Press just told us. But in the meantime, the difference here is not only that sports are back, where normally there's nothing. How about the fact that normally you're just seeing blockbusters one after another come out because people want to be in the air conditioning, they want to go to the movie theater, they want to be entertained. It's a slow time as far as going to games or concerts in the heat outside anyway. So normally for Hollywood, right now is the time that you release your big smashola. But that is not happening right now. I got some details for you on kind of the movie industry. But just weird.
Yeah.
The complete opposite of our normal July this year, where we're probably going to have more games and more sports to break down than any other month this year, possibly, if these leagues can push forward through C-19.
Yeah, we're doing July shows in March, April, and May. You know what I mean? We're doing our All-Star break shows going back 2 months ago, 3 months ago, and really into now and into all throughout June, too. So really 4 months almost of All-Star break shows. But you're right. Obviously, that matters so much less than a million things going on. But you're right. It's just these little moments marking the time about how strange this is. There's no Jurassic World. There's no giant Marvel movie. There's no, you know, whether it's an Avengers movie. There's no Black Panther. There's no, none of these things that we're used to, these giant staples, these hallmarks of our sort of American culture that we're so used to. Nope, that's not happening. It's just not. It's just another notch on the belt of this bizarre time claiming another thing.
The one movie I was really jacked up about that was supposed to be coming out is called Tenet. It's a Christopher Nolan flick.
Oh, it looks so awesome.
It looks so good. But it got pushed back, and that kind of ended the hope of any type of normal summer. But Tenet gets pushed back in Disney's live-action reboot of Mulan, which I thought was going to be a kid's movie, but it is definitely not from what it looks like.
It's not. They're swords. They're fighting each other.
They're very much swords. They got delayed again. Now, they're supposed to come out in mid-August. We'll see if that happens. But your streamers like Netflix and Prime and Disney Plus and all that stuff that we talk about all the time, they're crushing right now, as you'd imagine. Their stocks are only going up, and people are investing more and more in that side of entertainment. But as far as going to the theater, it's going to be a while, I would have to imagine. You know, broadcast networks have followed the same programming calendar, right, where pilots are ordered in January and filmed in March. Ads are sold in May, and according to this Axios breakdown, they call those upfronts, but it culminates in fall programming, so the lineup kicks off right around the football season. Now, that's going to be thrown off as well because no one's filming anything right now. Mm-hmm. Everything's delayed. No one's getting together on lots. So what's going to happen, I think, is that NBC and Fox and the networks are going to become sports networks where they're just airing everything that they can.
That's right.
And a movie like Tenet or Mulan, which is supposed to come out in August, maybe they just keep holding off until life's normal and you can fill up a movie theater again unless they get some mega deal where they can reverse course and put it on one of these streaming services. But normally this is the time of the year where the mega movie everyone waited for months comes out, and that is not going to be happening.
Yeah, so that date would sort of creep up, right, earlier and earlier. So it used to be, you're right, it was like, you think of July 4th, that's the big date. Well, that moved into June to get a head start. Now May is sort of the start unofficially of the summer blockbuster season, right? Where schools are about to end and it's kind of that time. I feel like that's when all the, you know, certainly Star Wars days have been, you know, May in the past, and now they've sort of moved to December holiday time. But I feel like there's always a Marvel movie at some point in May. I feel like that's when Endgame came out maybe last year. Maybe I'm nuts about that, but it's sort of like setting the tone for the blockbuster season, and then we get nothing but giant explosions, and it's Michael Bay's time during the summer, right? A lot of slow motion, a lot of big, dumb, stupid movies that make no sense, but we're happy about it because it's visually stimulating and wildly entertaining. But yeah, it's just
I saw last night that there are some movie theaters that have opened in some states. The biggest chains, like the stuff that you go to and I go to mostly. I've seen a few movies at like East Street Cinema in D.C. or some of these random art house type places. But by and large, I'm going to Regal, Kingstown or otherwise, you know, AMC, Tyson's or somewhere else. I think Swamp Fox Road over in Alexandria is an AMC. AMC, Cinemark, Regal, they've all remained closed until midsummer is what they're saying. So I would think they reevaluate now in the next couple weeks. Part of that is just because they may not be able to financially be viable to open up any sooner than that with people not coming. I mean, how many people are going to go sit in a theater? You can distance, as you're saying, but I think if you're not confident you can get people safely to sit in a stadium, how could you be confident about a dark, like poorly lit, cold, indoor movie theater? Yeah. That seems like one of the worst places to have a bunch of people. And even if you're spacing out, I mean, let's say it's me and my wife, you know, three seats, and then you and your wife or whatever it is, Thom and Monica and Dar and, you know, his whole family goes, they take all three of them. Like, if we're all spread out by seats, I just feel like it's still a risk that none of these companies are going to want to take for a while. I wonder when the next time is that we'll be sitting in a movie theater watching a movie.
I don't know. I really don't.
Like, and there's a really good chance that we're not in a movie theater in 2020.
You're right about that. Especially as you know, this summer, is supposed to be the slow period, and it's not slow. You look at the number of cases that are going on, and remember, these things typically thrive when the weather starts to get cold. So you get into the fall and then into the wintertime, you're right. You just may not see it. Or you may just see you want to come in here, you got to wait in a long line, distanced, of course, and get your temperature checked or, you know, a lot of restrictions if we just want to force it, you know. But I could absolutely see what you're saying.
What I'm curious about is to see with some of these TV deals that, you know, like NFL has with ESPN, 8 years, $1.9 billion, or Major League Baseball has with ESPN, you know, 8 years, $700 million. Obviously, the games are going to be on the networks that pay all the money, but how much will the local cables, so to speak, your 4, 5, 7, 9, Fox, NBC, those, are they just going to pick up random games where it's nighttime? Normally, we'd have a TV show to air right now. We've just been airing best of old highlight games anyway, because there's nothing to put on for you because nobody's filming anything right now. So we wouldn't traditionally put on a WNBA game or a Major League Lacrosse game or something like that, but possibly they will now. That's something that I think is certainly possible, that you get these TV, like sports networks just airing, it feels like, with all the games that come back in the last week of July. Ryan Zimmerman, next. Will he play for the Nats again on Grant and Danny? Listening to the Fan. Welcome back, Grant and Danny, on 106.7 The Fan. Ryan Zimmerman has played 15 years, 1,689 games, and had over 7,100 plate appearances with the Washington Nationals. He has, since 2012, been a mainstay in the postseason in the National League with the Nats, including a 2019 that culminated with a wild card win over the Brewers and a division series triumph over the Dodgers and a League Championship Series success over the Cardinals, a World Series win over the Astros, with him finally getting that elusive first ring. 35 playoff games on his ledger over 5 postseasons. Danny, if you were the Nats, how would you go about inaugurating some type of conversation about his future with the team after this year?
Great question. First, you got to ask, I would say, is what do you got to do? What do you want to do? What do you want? What's in your best interest? Here's what we're thinking, right? I would say that we would like you to occupy a similar role to what you had or what you were about to have, bench player, part-time starter, DH, another weapon at Davey Martinez's disposal to play matchups. You know, if you want to bring in the lefty to face Eric Thames, you got to deal with number 11, getting warmed up, taking swings off the tee, you know, down in the batting cage. He could absolutely be an asset for them. And that's where I would start that conversation, is what do you want? What do you want to do? Because we might be in this world next year. We might not have a normal spring training next year. But the situation for you and the world might be a little bit different. I would say I would find out what he's thinking first, kind of any good exploratory conversation to have. But if I'm the Nationals, I would want him back, both for what he's meant to this franchise and both for what he could still do.
He did say in his statement that this isn't the end that he wants to play, so you take him at his word there. But I think we've got to wait and see, right? He wouldn't be the first player to ever change his mind. I mean, he talked all offseason about how badly he wanted to play, and he's deciding to opt out now. Now, in no way am I vilifying him. I completely understand his decision. His mother has MS, and he's got a baby, and he's got to be on the home front for his family and doesn't want to risk bringing the coronavirus back to them in any way. Totally get that. But my point is, are we 100% confident that after he hangs out and watches baseball, I think the hardest thing to do, and this is speculative because I've never really done it, but I think the idea, Danny, of retirement, the hardest thing would be, like for you or me, would be listening to someone else just doing our show from 10 to 2 if we stepped away or something. Well, if you, for whatever reason, let's just say we're forced for 3 or 4 months to not do the show and you heard people doing it every day, at some point I think you kind of get numb to it. It doesn't sting as much anymore. It's probably not as anxiety riding to turn on the radio and not hear that it's still your show, right? So there is a chance, in my opinion, particularly it's not like he's a child. It's not like he's 23 years old. I mean, at 35 years old with his family, that he sits at home and watches the Nats play, and at the end of the season, maybe the bug's not biting him like it was at the beginning of the season. Or maybe he goes, it wasn't that bad. I enjoyed playing golf. I enjoyed being able to take the kids to the park. I loved being able to travel with Heather, wherever, whatever it is that they're going to do. Like, there is a really good chance, in my opinion, that you're forced into this thing that you didn't want to happen because you were afraid of what it might feel like without the game that you've never had. And now you realize there's a lot of things I can do that make me feel good that aren't just baseball. So if I'm the Nats, I probably say, hey, let's just revisit this next offseason. You know, let's get through this year, and let's see how you feel at the end of the year. Because if he's not 100% adamant about playing, if he's, you know, still penning these journals where he goes, I've got to think about this and I've got to consider that, then it's not worth playing anyway. So I just want to see where his mind's at after he gets this time away. Because the hardest part is ripping off the Band-Aid. Well, it's been ripped off for him now.
Yeah, so that's – we don't have to make a decision again. It's been taken care of. Like, we handled that. So we'll deal with next year. But I think at a certain point, like, I wish I had a better way of doing this. I don't know what the line is, okay? But I would say Victor Robles doesn't get to take all the time he needs. And it's not that Victor Robles isn't a stud or a guy that's going to be a focal point for this team. And I don't, you know, it's not like his future isn't Major League Baseball all-star. I think he's going to be an integral part of what the Nationals do over the next handful of years and then maybe even beyond. He hasn't earned the right to take his time to make a decision yet. I don't know what line it is. I don't know if you have to play 6 years in the league, 7 years in the league, 9.5 years, but they've got to be great. I know that at 15 years, though, I know the line is on the other side. So if Ryan Zimmerman wants to take his time to figure some things out, you take your time to figure some things out, Ryan Zimmerman. You know what I mean? Like, it's not fair. It's not totally equitable. But, you know, we don't always treat, you know, everybody the same. These aren't robots. This is a human being that's three-dimensional that's done an outrageous amount of good for baseball in D.C., for people in D.C., and even beyond when you look at his charity endeavors. I mean, just look at, basically on a whim, he and Heather this offseason decided, we're just going to help first responders. And they did more than I'll ever do in my lifetime in terms of helping people and the money that they raised and sort of the power that he had. He's interviewing Dr. Fauci. He's getting everybody together and yada, yada, yada. Next thing you know, an outstanding amount of work has been done. They're delivering everything from PPE to meals and beyond for the folks that are taking care of us. That guy has earned the right to take his time.
Yeah, they've been amazing during this pandemic. My brother's a chef with, you know, one of the companies that they're using now to help feed all of the first responders. You know, who he works as a chef for the, you know, Capitals and a couple of the teams in D.C. sports. But Zimmerman has gotten with them to feed those nurses and people at these hospitals on Mother's Day and Father's Day and various times. And it's amazing what they've done. You give them a lot of credit. I mean, on the field, just from a sheer baseball standpoint, you wonder, you start thinking about, what would he be next year? I mean, how much baseball will he have left? Would he be better off or worse off taking a year off? Is he going to benefit or be hindered by that? And part of me thinks, well, at his age, you don't really get better not playing. But maybe you come back fresher. I mean, he's been in great shape the last couple of years. Maybe your body feels better. That hasn't stopped him from getting hurt in season, obviously, as his body kind of, you know, breaks down on him a little bit over these last couple of years. He played in 85 and 52 games the last two seasons. But, you know, the batting average went from 303 in 2017, 264 in 2018, 257 in 2019. I kind of view that, or like the OPS, which is sliding from 930 to 824 to 736. I view that as kind of almost coincidental, or just kind of coincidental is maybe not the right word, but not all that indicative of what he is. Like, to me, you saw it in the playoffs. You can see 736 ops or 257 average without a ton of power or whatever in his third of a season. But guess what? When the playoff lights were on, that guy in the batter's box was a massive plus for the Nationals. And I think that's what he is in short bursts, is he can still be a really successful piece. I just think the role probably moving forward is going to get even smaller than it already was, where it has diminished some.
I mean, he got the hit against Josh Hader to set up Juan Soto's hit against Josh Hader. He hit the homer against Baez. He hit the homer to get the Nats on the board to remind everybody that they weren't just going to go down quietly, and it wasn't just an Astros coronation ceremony. You know, I mean, there were guys that had bigger hits. Obviously, see Howie Kendrick, see Rendon, and see Juan Soto, but they're not there without Ryan Zimmerman. They're not. I mean, everybody has to take a turn. I mean, just like you were talking about this the other day, I think it was a couple weeks ago, when NBC Sports Washington replayed some of those Capitals games, like some of the postseason, and you go, I forgot about fill in the blank. You don't have to go too far on the who did great, who did something awesome in this postseason before you get to Ryan Zimmerman, I guess is kind of the point there. There are guys that did more, that pulled their weight more, whether it be Strasburg, whether it be Kendrick, who had nothing but clutch, huge RBIs for the team. But you don't have to go too far down the list as you're scanning with your finger to get to what Zimmerman did for that postseason for them to win the World Series.
Movie Club will reassemble and be back in session next on Grant and Danny. Wanted to send a quick shout-out, one of our top P1s who listens every day and tweets us dozens of times throughout the show on some days, Chris in Hyattsville. He just sent us a picture, Danny. He had surgery. He's listening, it looks like, in the recovery room right now in the hospital. He's got some type of big brace or splint all over his leg. So get well, Chris.
Get well soon, pal.
And we appreciate that you were listening to the show while you are just starting to get your recovery going. It means
a lot. It's the kind of commitment we demand. If you're in the hospital, find a way to listen to us. You know what I mean? Like, don't half-ass it. Find a way to listen to the program.
Your first words when you come back too should be,
turn on.
Please get radio.com on my cell phone immediately. We're Grant and Danny. Movie Club is next. Grant and Danny welcoming you back. The Movie Club every day at 12:45. Last night we watched Solo, A Star Wars Story. Came out in 2018, 2 hours and 15 minutes, action, adventure, sci-fi. Hit the theaters in late May, going into June of 2018. Directed by Ron Howard. Starred Woody Harrelson, Emilia Clarke. I didn't know the guy who played Han Solo very well. Is he in anything else I should know?
I wasn't really familiar with him either. Apparently people know him. Alden Ehrenreich and Ollenbachen. I don't know much about him. But tough shoes to fill, obviously, as, I don't know, trying to be a young Harrison Ford, pretty much the most handsome man ever to lace up boots and wear a vest in a sci-fi film, and like one of the coolest characters ever. Not an easy thing to pull off, for sure.
My guy Donald Glover, Childish Gambino in this movie, played Lando, who was awesome. Okay, so here is my thought on this. Ready?
Uh-huh. Yep.
Thommy had been on a heater coming into this movie, picking winners left and right. It's time for him to just step across the timeline and hoist and take the temperature, because the heater continued. This was my favorite Star Wars movie we watched, not close.
Wow.
I didn't just like this for like, oh, it's Star Wars. I can do that. I liked this movie a lot. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I would watch it again. Million times better than any of the old nubby Star Wars movies that we watched, because it's up to date and has real technology being used. And I also thought this, Danny, and I know that'll all make you mad, but I think we can agree to this. As far as origin stories go, like, I loved how they tied a bunch of these things in, how you find out he meets Chewie, and as soon as he heard about the beast and I see, like, the shadow of Chewie walking toward him, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's Chewie. And then as soon as, I didn't know the guy's name, but as soon as I saw the dude sitting at the table, I went, oh, we know that guy. And then I didn't know his name was Lando off the top of my head, but I was like, they're like, Lando. I thought it was really, really well done. Now, you're the Star Wars guy here, so you'd have to agree or disagree with that. I'm just a dummy that thinks that. But I really liked this movie. I had a lot of fun with it last night.
That's fascinating you say that. So this movie has done the poorest of any Star Wars movie that's ever been released. It did the poorest at the box office, and it even caused Disney maybe to rethink some of their strategy. Basically,
was it too good and people were mad about that?
And every other year kind of thing, right? So you had Rogue One, a movie that's pretty universally accepted and liked an awful lot because it was really good. In an off year, then you have the main storyline, the Skywalker saga, right? And then the following year, you do another offshoot, whether it's a Han Solo movie or something else. They've kind of decided to slow down because of the lack of critical success of this movie. So people didn't like it, by and large. I personally have always felt that it got unfairly beaten up. I'm not sure why it was panned the way that it was. To me, it's nowhere close to some of the pinnacle work in Star Wars lore. Obviously, the original trilogy, I think it's not close to as good as Rogue One was. But I think you said it, Grant. This one's fun. I had fun watching this movie. I enjoyed it. It's probably 20 minutes too long. I would say ultimately it didn't need to be 2 hours and 15 minutes.
So you didn't see it in theater?
No, of course I did. Of course
okay,
I did.
Okay, I see. So you're just saying last night it was fun again, basically.
No. I mean, at the time, I thought this movie was unfairly beaten up both by critics and by fans.
No, I heard you say that, yes. But last night, your experience was the same, or you liked it more or less, or what?
Oh, this movie is I liked it initially. I said it was fun initially. It's even grown on me since. I enjoy it. I enjoy this movie. It is, again, it can't ever approach the majesty and the perfection of some of the originals. And, again, I don't think it's as good as Rogue One. I don't even think it's as good as Force Awakens necessarily, which I think now it has been unfairly kind of beaten up as time has gone on. But for a story that had to walk, that had to thread a needle, where they replaced everybody from directors to producers to editors and everything else, and there were myriad problems with filming and things that happened. Ron Howard came in, and they replaced Michael Kenneth Williams was initially Dryden Voss. He was replaced last minute with Paul Bettany. A million things didn't go right on this thing. I think it ended up fine. It's a fun movie. I enjoy it. It's probably, again, in the Star Wars universe, my 6th seed or so, but it's better than people have given it credit for. So that's my take.
Amelia Clark's in it, and she's very, very attractive. They tried to make her not that attractive at the beginning of the movie, but then when we see her again, she's a smoke, and that was fun. And she is an awesome actress in everything she's in, and she was so good in this movie, too. Mm-hmm. So I have two questions before we get to Thami and Dar that are just I need answered on this movie itself. The first is the bad guy that she talks to at the very end, okay? Is that Darth Maul?
Oh, yeah, it is. Oh, yeah,
okay,
it is.
So that's what I thought because I remember those toys that came out. But then the timeline doesn't really work for me, right, in terms of the age of everybody.
You're confused. I get that. All right, so I will help you here.
So Darth Maul is a bit, like, in other words, if you just look at the timeline of when the bad guys are and Vader and Darth Maul and all this, they're basically telling me that Harrison Ford in the Star Wars is like hundreds of years old. Isn't he a human? He's not like a Chewie creature that just lives forever.
No. You're going to tie yourself into a knot here. Don't do it. Let me help you. 30 years, basically, is when Episode 1, Phantom Menace, takes place. Yes, you with me so far?
30 years after this.
No, 30 years before the original Star Wars comes out, A New Hope. We meet Luke Skywalker.
Yes.
Twin sons, Tatooine. 30 years before, that's when Phantom Menace takes place. You got me so far?
That's Darth Maul.
Yes. In Phantom Menace, Darth Maul gets cut in half by Obi-Wan Kenobi. Underrated fight scene. Probably the second best lightsaber duel in terms of artistry in the history of Star Wars. Doesn't get talked about enough. Okay, Qui-Gon dies. Obi-Wan Kenobi cuts Darth Maul in half. He survives that out of pure hatred, dark side energy, and malevolence. We see him behind the scenes in some of the extra things that are canon, Star Wars cartoons. He's now consumed by hatred both of Obi-Wan Kenobi and the Emperor, who just cast him aside for a new apprentice. The Emperor didn't care anymore, and he thought he cared, and he didn't care, and that drove him with hatred, basically to revenge, to kill Obi-Wan Kenobi, and ultimately try to find a way to overthrow the Emperor, okay? He appears in cartoons, stuff that takes place around Attack of the Clones, Clone Wars and stuff, but we never see him in main Star Wars movies. The fact that he was revealed to run Crimson, basically, right, is so exciting for Star Wars geeks. That's a big deal. So this is taking place, I would say, a decade plus before the events of Star Wars A New Hope. Before we meet Chewie and Han at the Mos Eisley Cantina, this is about the infancy of the Rebellion. That's what Enfys Nest was.
Right, because at the end of the movie, they're going and they're like, there's this guy with a mission, and that's obviously going to be Jabba the Hutt.
And that's Jabba the Hutt, exactly.
Right. Okay, but so the math works out then, your point is, with Darth Maul,
yes,
with Vader, with the ages, the math is all good?
Yes.
Okay. Thami and Dar, how did you feel about last night?
So I'm kind of with Grant on this, where I really liked it. I didn't have, you know, the entire background that Danny has with Star Wars. I obviously watched the movies when I was younger, but I really enjoyed it a lot more than I think critics did. I just did a quick Rotten Tomato search to see just how bad critics hated it. Man, I feel like I'm missing something. Like, everybody's just saying to watch the originals and to skip this entirely. I don't know. I had fun. Sounds like we
all
agree on that.
Like, yeah, all it's a fun movie.
First 10 minutes where they're just going around on like that little hovercraft, which I'm sure you'll have a name for, was awesome. And I was just like, I'm in. This is neat. This is better than anything I saw in the 7 hours of Star Wars movies that we watched so far. Tommy, what do you got?
I'm really surprised that you enjoyed it so much. I'm glad that you did. And the reason why is because, I don't know about you, Danny, but this movie kind of has a standalone feature that most Star Wars movies don't. And what I mean by that is, of course, you have to be familiar with the storyline and the canon and the way that everything is falling into place. But it's one of these movies that you can pick up and take out of the series and out of this cinematic universe and watch on your own time, just like we did last night. So I feel that the way that it came out, where it's leaving Netflix and going to Disney Plus, and then Grant finally seeing the original three movies, I feel like it was the perfect time. I'm just glad that Grant was able to appreciate it like how many of our listeners are, or did, how many, you know, Danny did as well, and then me. It's exciting to hear that Grant was able to step out of his box for a second and enjoy the movie.
No, I really, really liked it. And I will say that had I not have watched the other Star Wars, I think I still would have liked it a lot. But there were so many things
you
I
would
picked
have had
up.
A lot of questions.
Exactly. There was just a lot of stuff I picked up on.
For Star Wars fans, GP, there's a lot of, and I hate this term, but I don't have a better one, there's a lot of service done here. In other words, we care desperately about Han Solo. We've wanted to see Han Solo do Han Solo shtick forever, okay? And that was exciting. The Lando stuff is like crack to us. This is like the coolest guy in the galaxy who is kind of a bit player in the Star Wars universe. We meet him in Empire, and he's sort of, his hands are tied, and, you know, he ends up double-crossing and then tries to help, and then he's, you know, he's in Return of the Jedi. But it's very static. We all know this guy is incredible, and we've wanted to see him portrayed and get some more meat to chew on. So that was amazing.
The
meeting of Han and Chewie is amazing. It's as you kind of touched on. This was a like how we got here type stuff for Star Wars fans, that there's an extra layer to that was meant to hit maybe harder than it did.
And Danny, I don't know about you, but it seems like Donald Glover was the perfect casting for that.
He was great.
And there's not enough conversation of people in that world that give him the credit for taking Lando, like what you said, which was an incredible character from the original movies, and then kind of amplifying him in Solo. I don't think people talk about that enough.
Agreed. Agreed. It's fun.
The scene where he's at the card table just shticking it up, and then he cheats and wins, so good. So then my last question really quick before I name the movie for tonight.
Uh-huh.
So total Star Wars movies, okay? We have the three originals that we watched, A New Hope, Empire, and Return, right? Then there are those three movies where Darth Maul was introduced when I was like in, I don't even know, like middle school or high school.
The prequels, yes.
And that was what? That's like Phantom Menace is one of those. Sith is
Phantom
one of
those. Phantom Menace, yes. Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith.
Okay. And then was this movie one of the last three over the last several years, or is this a different thing? Like, are there nine total Star Wars movies or more?
No, there's more. So there are nine movies.
So we had Force Awakens, where you were crying like a baby in the theater.
Correct.
We had the Skywalker one that just came out recently.
Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker. So you've got nine in the think of it this way, nine in the Skywalker saga, nine main canon central. These are the things that we care about the most. Yes. So the beginning of Anakin Skywalker, is Phantom Menace, and then the journeys of him as Darth Vader, and then his son, Luke Skywalker. There are nine main timeline movies.
So this is kind of like a spin-off, Marvel-wise, where now we're going to do like, oh, we're done with our movies. Avengers Endgame happened, but now we're going to do this cool movie on Ant-Man again or something like that.
Exactly. This is their Doctor Strange or their Black Widow or their Black Panther or whatever.
Makes sense.
You got
it was good. All right, so I just put a list together, and I looked up the best movies right now on Netflix as listed by some website. I randomized it and just selected one. And the movie I came up with, it is long, and that's the problem. It's Zodiac. I don't know much about it. Zodiac stars.
Grant, just go with it. You're going to love it.
Really?
Yeah, Robert Downey Jr. is amazing in that movie.
Yeah, Downey Jr.'s in it, and Jake Gyllenhaal. It's got a killer cast. It's dark and suspenseful, apparently. But it's long. It's like 2.5 hours. But the movie tonight is Zodiac. So see if you can punch through it, and that'll be the movie for tomorrow's breakdown. Albert Breer gets our final hour started talking NFL football with us next time.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.